This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. Actually, I think our guests can manage your life much better than I can. And apparently, Kerry Kasem can't manage her life as well as I would want her to manage her life, as she just called and something came up. Unfortunately, she can't be on the air today. You or someone you know been injured. I had expected that. Wow. I love the background ad. Just keep pushing that ad for Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. Thanks, Wayman. Just keep doing it. We'll do it for the whole show. So what I was saying was that Kerry Kasem just called. Actually, she FaceTimed with you. She looked really beautiful. I think she had something else going on, which was much more important than Gervy's Law. And I don't know what is more important than Gervy's Law, but we're talking about something that's probably more important than anything in life, and that is life. And Kerry really should be with us today because I think she has a lot to add, but she looked like she was having a good time. So, Kerry, have a great time. Sorry, we're going to miss you today here on Gervy's Law, but hopefully you'll be back next week. And I'm sure our guest will also be upset that he cannot speak with you, Kerry. Our guest is someone who I'm excited to speak to. He is a very well-known writer, television personality. He's the author of 15 books, 6 consecutive New York Times bestsellers. That's really something. He has written for the New York Times magazine, The New Yorker, Gourmet magazine. He has been a contributor on NPR, CNN, and Fox News, and a host of other media outlets. He was a writer on 2 PBS series. He's the inspiration for the new NBC drama, Council of Dads. A lot of people may have seen that. And he's a... if you check him out, 2 TED Talks. The TED Talks are really incredible. They've been viewed more than 2 million times. So you have to check out his 2 TED Talks, one on happy families and one on surviving cancer and the Council of Dads. His new book is Life is in the Transitions, Mastering Change at Any Age. He is a life historian, as he self-describes himself. A Yale and Cambridge grad, and he talks about life is a story you tell yourself. Bruce Feiler, welcome to Gervy's Law. We're excited to hear your story.
Thank you very much. Nice to be with you. Sorry that your colleague won't join our conversation, but we'll have lots to talk about, and nice to be with you. In fact, you know what? That was such a generous introduction. Far be it for me to actually point out the happy news that it is now obsolete, or at least out of date, because we've just learned on Friday that Life is in the Transition, 1 week from today, will debut as a top 10 New York Times bestseller. So that 6 bestseller number just blessedly, kindly climbed to number 7. So this story is touching a nerve in the middle of this pandemic, and so I'm happy to have a chance to talk about it today.
You know, Bruce, I'm so excited that you introduced that news to us here on Gervy's Law, because I feel like when you were on Good Morning America, you talked about some of the things that was in the book, and you were introducing things. You said it's the first time on national television that I'm going to talk about. You talked about life quakes and some of the other things. And here on Gervy's Law, you just made it public that you now are a 7 consecutive New York Times bestseller. So congratulations on that. And I want to say, and you can say thank you. I know you feel real good about it, but it was really expected. But here's Bruce, where the proof is in the pudding. Here are a couple of reviews from the book, and these are from people who read it, not professional reviewers. I'd give it a 10. I read this book on Kindle, but I'm planning to buy the paper copy as well. It is one of those books which you want to read many times during your lifetime and add your markings on its papers each and every time. It helps to see where you are and where you are going to be. Bruce Feiler is a consummate storyteller who teaches us that meaning is found in our stories and how to connect each one of us. This brand new book is one of the most valuable books I've read in the past 10 years. It's extremely well researched and extraordinarily well written. If you're interested in finding meaning in the major upsets and turning points in your life, want to settle into a coherent life story, or just are looking for the answer to the age-old adage, what's the meaning of life? You need to read this book. Wow. You must feel pretty good about that, Bruce.
Well, it's really been, you know, an amazing experience, because I spent the last 5 years working on this book, basically crisscrossing the country, collecting what became hundreds of life stories of Americans of all ages, all walks of life, all 50 states, people who lost limbs, lost homes, changed careers, changed religions, got sober, got out of bad marriages. And I got interested in collecting these life stories because I was just walloped by life a few years ago, as you know.
Right. Why don't you tell us the story?
Yeah, so I was living, you know, what I think of as a kind of a linear life now, where I discovered what I wanted to do early in writing books. I sold my first book 31 years ago next month. I wrote books about Japan and about country music, and I spent a year as a circus clown. I spent my 30s back and forth writing books about the Bible, retracing Walking the Bible and the series of PBS series that I hosted, as you mentioned. I got married, I had children, and life was that kind of fantasy ascending narrative that we all think that our lives are going to be. But then I just got walloped by life. First, I got the cancer that you mentioned, now a dozen years ago. I was a new dad at the time, and it looked like I was going to die. I was thinking about this with the Chadwick Boseman death. Right. He just died at 43. I was 43 when I got diagnosed with cancer. I asked a group of six friends to form a council of dads, and that I wrote a memoir about that, and that became the NBC series this summer. I almost went bankrupt. That was the year of the Great Recession. And then my dad, as you know, got Parkinson's and became very depressed and tried to take his own life. 6 times in 12 weeks, my dad tried to end his life. And in the middle of this, we were dealing with all sorts of kind of family crises, as you might imagine. And I like difficult conversations, but like the conversations were unhavable at that time. And on a whim, I'm the story guy, I'm the meaning guy, as you mentioned earlier. And I thought, well, what if I send him a question about his life? And it was a Monday morning, and I emailed him a question. He lives in Savannah, Georgia, my hometown. And I said, tell me about the toys you played with as a kid. And he thought about that. He dictated his answer to Siri and then brought him life. And so I sent him another one. Tell me about the house you grew up in. And this went on for what became years, until this man who had never written anything longer than a memo backed into writing an autobiography. And when I would tell this story to others, everybody had a similar story about how their life was overturned by some unexpected event, a natural disaster, an illness, a work crisis, a family crisis. And I realized that no one knows how to tell their story anymore. And that's what propelled me to gather all these stories I just was talking about. And at the end of that process, I kind of had 6,000 pages of transcripts, 1,000 hours of interviews, or in the law, you know what it's like to have this huge volume. And I spent a year coding them with people, trying to kind of identify ideas and patterns and takeaways and tips that could help all of us in times of crisis. And sort of the big idea is that linear life is no longer in existence, that we all have these non-linear lives that have many more twists and turns and transitions. And my book, as you mentioned when I was on Good Morning America, unveiling kind of the first new model for how to navigate life transitions in 50 years. And so I have been walking around my home for half a decade saying, people should talk about transitions. Like, they're more common. Like, we don't know how to deal with them. Everybody needs this skill. And then, like, muttering to myself, and then lo and behold, this book arrives in the middle of a pandemic when the entire planet is in the middle of a transition, and I no longer have to persuade people that transitions are important. And people turn out, as you just were sharing, to have this kind of visceral, I need this book now because I'm dealing with a set of life circumstances that I couldn't anticipate and I don't exactly know how to handle.
I think that so many people are dealing with it. And by the way, just listening to you for the last few minutes, it reminded me when I was watching your TED Talks, it appeared that you were just talking off the cuff. It wasn't even like you prepared your remarks, and it was so smooth. It was from the heart, not from the mouth. Did you actually prepare those TED Talks, or did you just speak like you did just now on Gervie's Law, talking about your life and how you have moved forward, coming from a very academic background of Yale and Cambridge?
Well, that's such a thoughtful, that's such a thoughtful question, and I appreciate it. And and my answer to that is, we are live now on the radio. You mentioned we're also being streamed. Some people might be listening to this as a podcast. And I think that the reason I bring all that up is because as a kind of these various media have progressed, we now know that people appreciate authenticity more and vulnerability. Like, this is a way of communicating. It's not what they teach you in radio school 20 years ago, like to be the voice of God and to be Mr. Know-it-all. And this is a problem that men in particular have of trying to fix every problem. And I found when I was looking people in the eye and saying, please tell me the story of your life and tell me the most difficult time of your life, that I couldn't do that with those people unless I was prepared to talk about my own difficulties and my own hardships and how I got through them. And so I think that it's something about the moment that we're in now is that pretense just doesn't work anymore. That I'm not saying that I'm an expert and I'm going to wag my finger and tell you what to do. I'm saying where you are, I was. Just happens to be the way I live my life. I went out and talked to hundreds of people who were where we were and found out from them how they got through it. So this book is not saying you should do this. It's saying here are dozens, scores, hundreds of other people who went through what you're going through. And I'm talking about, as I said, people, two-time cancer survivor who climbed Mount Everest, veterans who had limbs shot off in Iraq and Afghanistan, people who were in cults, people who got sober and were estranged from their families and had to make up with their families, people who went through wrenching things. And I'm going to show you what they did, and you're going to find some of those, like, thank God I don't have that problem, but you're going to find people in here who are very familiar, and they're going to show you the steps and the tools that they went through. And I think that's why people are helping. And I'm not saying I'm an expert, do this. I'm saying I found other people. This is what they did. And I bet my darndest that it's going to be able to help you.
You know, it's interesting because you've said life is a story you tell yourself. Mm-hmm. And just listening to you, you're telling your story. And I think we all have a story. We have to take a break. We're going to talk more to Bruce Feiler after the break about his new book, Life is in the Transitions. And we'll talk about some of the other books. He's had several bestsellers, as we've talked about. Carrie isn't here today, as I mentioned. But I do have my kids, Hudson and Harper, here, who are 6 and 7 years old. If I can break them away from Mario Kart and Toka Hospital on their iPads, maybe we'll get them to join us at the end of the show. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Every life we have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy.
All right. Everyone has trouble. But don't worry, be happy. Very appropriate song for our topic today on Gervie's Law. Carrie Kasem, if you were listening in the first segment, isn't with us here. She's on her own. I don't know what she's doing, but she called in, couldn't make it. But we do have my kids, Hudson and Harper, who are sitting next to me in the studio on their iPads, and hopefully we'll get them to talk a little bit, but they're more interested in life on the iPad versus life in a metaphysical or a more of an epistemic thought process way. As Bruce Feiler, our guest, is, he is an authority on life, Life Story Project. He's a voice on contemporary life. author of 15 books, and his new book, Life is in the Transitions, Mastering Change at Any Age. One of the comments that I was reading that really stood out was from someone named Abigail Moreno, who wrote, "This is a book that I've needed and didn't even know it. We live life expecting it to go a certain way, and it doesn't always end up as expected. This book made me see things and realize things about life that I had never seen or thought of." Bruce, when she says that life doesn't always go the way expected, it's prophetic, isn't it? And isn't that what you really were focusing on when you traveled around and talked to people about their stories? And, you know, particularly when you talk about issues with families and happy families, which you've written a lot about, how do you reconcile the expectations versus reality?
So I think that what I discovered, there was a moment in this process when I pulled a book off a shelf, and I thought that the book would move, and the shelf moved, and the shelf opened up, and there turned out to be this whole other room on the other side, you know, like those fantasy novels. It turns out, like, Dan Brown has a room like that in his castle.
Batman had one, too.
And what was in that room was new for me and turns out to be new for a lot of other people. I've learned since this book has been out the last few weeks. And that is that our culture kind of has an expectation, a kind of paradigmatic shape. Like in the ancient world, they didn't have linear time, so they thought life was a cycle, right? To every season, turn.
Right.
Because that's
what
the agricultural calendar was. In the Middle Ages, they think life is a staircase up to middle age, and then it's a staircase down. So you peak at middle age, and there's no new love at 40, or retiring and starting a new venture, or, you know, renewing yourself, or becoming a late bloomer, or getting sober and, you know, reconciling with your family, whatever it might be. And we grew up, those of us who grew up in the 20th century, with this idea that life was a linear arrow of progress. And that reaches its peak in the 70s with this book, Passages, written by Gail Sheehy, who herself passed on and died this week, where we were told, like, everyone does the same thing in their 20s and 30s, and everyone has a midlife crisis. Like, that's where the idea of a midlife crisis became popularized in the 70s. It turns out that that's not at all how we live. This idea that we're going to have crises on birthdays that end in zero, it's just not accurate to what people go through. And so what my data, when I collected all these stories, what the data shows is that we go through a life change, what I call the disruptor, 36 in the course of our lives. That's one every 12 to 18 months. I mean, that's more often than most people see a dentist, right? This could be something negative, like a diagnosis or losing your job, or a natural disaster, or it could be something positive, right? Like getting married is a disruptor, or having a baby is a disruptor, or in your case, two babies in 2 years, it sounds like, is a disruptor. And most of these we navigate pretty well. We update our story. We, find something. The hour that I spent before our conversation, I spent helping my children set up their Zoom workspaces for school, rearranging furniture. Like, that was my evening.
And those are your twins, Eden and Tybee, who are now, 15 years
old? Exactly. Thank you. They're 15. They're starting 10th grade this week. But one in 10 of those becomes a big life quake, as I call it, a massive change that has kind of the tire on the Richter scale of consequences and has aftershocks that last for years. And that's what we're in now. We are in this collective life quake. Everybody's going through it together. But what's deceptive about it, and kind of the first rule of a life transition, is the life quake can be voluntary or involuntary, but the transition must be voluntary. So whether you choose to get sober, or you choose to improve your marriage, or you choose to leave your marriage, or you choose to, you have to look for a job, or that you have a medical event, whatever it is, you have to choose to go through the process of, that I kind of walk you through in the second half of the book that we'll get into, presumably in the second half of this conversation. So that's what's deceptive about this moment, because it looks like we're all going through this together, but the transition that you're going to go through is different from the one I'm going to go through, is different than the one that Abigail is going through in the story you just read. And so that's this very interesting moment that we're in now, because this is the first shared lifequake that most of us have gone through in a century. And that's why it turns out this is a year of transition, and sort of the kind of the idea of life is in the transitions is this is a lifelong sport that no one's been teaching us how to play.
Right.
Because if you think we go through 3 to 5 in a lifetime, and as you know from my book, they take 3, 4, 5 years, that's half of our adult lives we're in transitions, and no one has been helping us do it. And so that's the opportunity. You mentioned happiness. Like, we know we can work on happiness or habits. We know we can work on our tennis game or our, you know, our souffle isn't going to get souffle-ier unless we work at it. We know we have to work on our relationships. We know we have to work on our bodies. But these transitions that we're going through, no one has been talking to us about how to work on them. And that's what I'm trying to offer people, which is a way to handle exactly what you're going through now a lot more effectively and more efficiently, and in a way that will improve your life immeasurably.
So, Bruce, I have to play lawyer here and cross-examine you on your last statement, because it's interesting. You point out how everyone has their own transitions, their own issues, and they're not necessarily the same. In fact, they're probably different with different circumstances. If you were laying a foundation, they would all be different. But then you come up with this book and you're providing guide to getting through this and to dealing with it and strategies to moving forward through the transitions. Isn't it true that it's very difficult for you to put words on paper when people each have their own set of circumstances that don't mirror each other?
Well, what this is the biggest change that I went through, and I really appreciate this question because it's a way for me to say that I was wrong. Because when I went into this, I assumed that the tools for navigating a health crisis and a job loss and a move and a, you know, religion change, half of Americans change religions in the course of their life, 4 in 10 of us are in interfaith marriage. So I thought that the toolkit would be different, and I just was flat wrong. That was the excitement. The excitement was talking to somebody. I talked to a man from inner city Philadelphia who was incarcerated at 21, already had multiple children, went through a program for incarcerated dads. He got out of prison, now runs that program in Philadelphia. He told me he has the boots he was wearing when he in prison to, in by the back door of his home to remind himself how lucky he is to be alive.
Wow.
He's in his 20s. I talked to a man in his 70s who was a 13th generation cracker from the hills, from the Appalachian Hills of North Georgia. He was in the failed Iranian hostage rescue mission in the deserts of central Iran. His plane blew up and he was pulled from the flames, the last American to leave the country. He told me he has the boots he was wearing on that day with his blood on it in his office to tell him how lucky he is to be alive. So that is the magic that happened to me 10 times a day for years, as the connections in these stories just presented themselves. And that's what it made me realize, oh, mementos. Mementos are a powerful way to go through a transition, because it allows us to, you know, acknowledge and pay respect to the past, put it on a shelf, so to speak, move forward, and then when we emotionally were kind of taken back and we needed to mourn again, we can reconnect with that memento. So that's what happened to me day after day for years.
You know, it reminds me of the story we hear of Holocaust survivors who came to this country and packed a bag, a suitcase, put it by the door. They were living their life here in America, and they always had that suitcase by the door, thinking you never know when you're going to have to pick up and leave. Always a reminder.
And I asked everybody, what was the biggest emotion you struggled with in your time of change? Number one answer, fear.
Yeah.
What would the future bring? Could I do it without money? How will I live? Be able to live sober? How will I be able to live without the person whom I loved? Number two answer, sadness. I liked the past. I liked having that job. I liked life before the pandemic. I liked being able to go out to sporting events or concerts. Now, how am I going to get over that? Number three was shame. Like, I'm ashamed that I have a child with special needs or addiction. I'm ashamed that I need help, that I can't pay my bills. I'm ashamed of what I did when I was addicted to opioids. And I ask people how they navigated that emotion. And when you say that suitcase under the bed, that is a memento, as you say. People use rituals. 80% of people use rituals. They jump out of planes, they get tattoos, they hold memorial services, they sing songs. A way to say, I'm going through a difficult time, it's emotional, I'm getting through it, and this is a public way of saying that I'm in this period of change, I'm going through a transition.
Yeah, that's so important, and those words are really important because people don't realize, like, when you talk about it, and we have to take a quick break, but one of the things that it reminds me of when you're talking about this is while you focus on how important it is to tell your children stories about the past and how they are much better adjusted as they grow up when they've learned about your past. And we're just going to leave one real quick cliffhanger here, something that I was really interested in. In your TED Talk about happy families, the question was to kids, what's their number one wish? I'm going to take a break now. When we come back, you'll tell us about kids' number one wish, because I think it's representative of everything that we're dealing with in the pandemic, as well as what you're talking about in the book that you learned firsthand. And when you read the book, you can share the stories that so many people want to talk about. And that's Life is in the Transitions. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Changes, that's right. Transitions, changes. His book is Life is in the Transitions, Mastering Changes at Any Age. We're talking to Bruce Feiler, who is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the inspiration for the NBC drama Council of Dads. A lot of you may have seen that. He talks about life quakes. And before the break, Bruce, I mentioned the cliffhanger, which was, what is kids' number one wish for their parents? And I don't want to break the news to everyone who thinks the answer is not spending enough time with them. Why don't you talk about that and tell us how that comes into play with the pandemic now and with your new book?
So the new book, as we've been talking, is called Life is in the Transitions, and it's about how going through disruptive life experiences kind of compels us to update our life story in a lot of ways, that what is a pandemic but a breach in the normal, and that's what happens in stories. And, you know, you're in Los Angeles, and all filmed entertainment, all storytelling involves conflict, and what happens when the conflict arises, when the wolf shows up in the fairy tale, is what we is the kind of fundamental skill of getting through a life transition. And I got interested in this idea of how our life is a story that we tell ourselves, in part because of an idea that I discovered when I was working on this a previous book of mine, as you mentioned, Secrets of Happy Families. And so I was writing a book. My kids were about the age of your kids. We had gotten through the kind of sippy cups and diaper caddies and those early years when, as I like to say, we played defense, and we were ready to kind of start playing offense. And there's kind of this period. Humans have something that no other species has, which is that our kids, that most species, when they stop being weaned by their parents, they can have children of their own. But humans have this 10-year gap and, you know, like between, right, potty training and the prom, right, between the first step and the first kiss. And that's where we can kind of build family identity. That's in some ways what it's there for, is to pass on our values. And so I was writing this book about how you do this. And the single most interesting idea that I found was about the power of family stories. And it came from researchers at Emory who found that that children who know more about their family history, what was happening, you know, where their grandparents were born, an aunt or an uncle who had an illness that they overcame, what was happening when their parents met, the children who knew more about their family history were better able to navigate the ups and downs in their lives. It was the number one predictor of a child's emotional well-being, is to understand that their lives are not ascending or descending, but they're oscillating and that they have ups and downs. And so in the course of that, I met a woman named Ellen Galinsky of the Families and Work Institute, and she did this fascinating study, and this is so ripe, we're now in back-to-school time around the world, and she asked kids, you know, what is the number one thing that they wanted from their parents? But before she asked the kids, she asked the parents, what do you think? So what do you think your kids are going to want more than anything else? And the parents all said universally that what they want, the kids are going to want, was to spend more time with them. The parents were wrong. The thing that the children most wanted was that their parents be less tired and less stressed.
Wow.
So here we go. We're looking at our screens. We're nervous about money. We're trying to balance new gender roles, and now we're trying to balance the pandemic and work from home, and we're nervous about losing our jobs and paying the bills, and are we living in the right place, and are we going to get through this, and then there's an election that's a big kind of national trauma, and our kids are on to us. And that is, to me, such a striking and sobering note that we can't hide these things from our kids. And I think the lesson from that is that we have to teach our kids. We have to be much more open about our feelings, about that there are this, that we are in struggles. And I have talked about this back when we used to have live events, and I would travel around the country speaking.
Way back then, ancient history.
Remember that? Remember that? Like in the before time?
And
I would talk about this, and parents would nod. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Right. They tell their kids. No. As parents, we want to protect our kids. We want them to. We don't want them to know that we're suffering or that we're worried. And we think that's a gift, and in fact, it's harming our kids. Right? It's like the Purell thing. You know, when your kids are so young, you like you use so much hand sanitizer that you don't give your kids a certain kind of germs. Like, we need to give our kids the calluses and the experience so that when they go through disruptors or life quakes, they believe that they know people who can get through these events. And I think that's the opportunity that we're in now.
You know,
to use this as a storytelling exercise with our kids, it's a struggle for all of us. Let's try to do it better together.
And it reminds me, Bruce, when you talk about this, a very simple sign that they have at my kids' Little League. I coach both my son and my daughter, and it says, facing the audience, it says, remember, your kids are watching you. And it's something that's really important to think about, because I think that's suggestive of what you're talking about. When kids are onto us, and I like the way you said that, they see and watch us every move. And when we are struggling, when we are trying to deal with transitions, when we're trying to deal with change, when we're trying to deal with this pandemic, the greatest gift we can give our children is to show them love and caring and support and handle things as best we can. And that's what your book talks about.
Well, just a quick word about the sports, because you brought it up. There's a whole chapter in Secrets of Happy Families about this. And I talked to the folks up at Stanford at the Positive Coaching Alliance. And what they said was so memorable to me, which is, you know, there's basically two aspects of youth sports. There's the sports. There's the nuts and bolts, the swinging, the shooting, the blocking, the tackling, whatever it might be.
Right.
And then there's the character. Okay? Let the coaches do the sports and you do the character. You know, no PGA, like no post-game analysis. In the car home, your job is not to say, oh, work on this technique or whatever. Your job is to be supportive and to help them make a story. You know, that you're the kid who misses the free throw that loses the game, that comes back and sinks it the next time. And the kid's going, really? I'm that person? You know, but yes, that it's all about stories. And that's really the heart of the kind of transition moment that we're in now, and the whole kind of mega theme of life is in the transitions, which is that life is a story you tell yourself. And we are in a chapter now that we all happen to be going through together, where every single person on the planet, every single person listening to us today, has had their life disruptive or, you know, interrupted by a life quake in some serious way. It's not unique to you. You may think you're the only one. You may be, you know, I find that people have one of two reactions when they go through a life transition. Either they make a 217, I bet you're this person. You make a 217 item list and you say you're going to do it in a weekend and you're going to like knock it out in 3 days, which is delusional, but that's what some of us do.
Right.
The rest of us are like stuck. We don't move. We're in a fetal position on the sofa, you know, or on our bed. Like, I will never get through this. I'm the only one. that's also delusional and wrong in its own way, because you look at enough of them, as I did, they turn out, for example, to have a kind of a very easy-to-understand structure, like life transitions involve three phases. The first is what I call the long goodbye, where you are acknowledging your feelings and saying goodbye to the life we've left behind. The next is the messy middle, where you shed certain habits and create new habits. And then the last one is the new beginning, where you unveil your new self and kind of update your story. And everybody turns out to be good at one of these phases and bad at one of these phases. And one of the things I try to do in the book, and Life is in the Transitions, is give you the tools to know, well, which phase am I good at? Like, you know, maybe I'm bad at saying goodbye, or maybe I'm good at saying goodbye. 39% of the people are bad at goodbye. Half the people are bad at the missing middle, but some are good. They like experimenting. They like, you know, calling their friends and kind of coming up with a long possible list of things that they could do. So let's find out the phase you're good at. Let's start there so you can build confidence, because sooner or later it is going to get hard. You can't do it in a weekend.
You know, I think that's great advice. I don't know, Bruce, if you want to stick around a little bit or if you have to get going. You're in New York now, and I know it's a little bit late, but I'm going to bring my kids on. I don't know what they're going to talk about, but I'm going to try and see if I can be motivated by your book and try to get them to talk a little bit about their experiences of life up to 6 years old and 7 years old, which is very limited versus what the lifespans that you spoke to people about. But if you want to stick around,
fine. I'm happy to stick around, because my kids, blessedly, are 15. They can put themselves to bed. That's a nice
I'm dreaming about it. But you know, interestingly enough, you know, when you talk about shared experiences, you talk about crazy mornings. I'm using your words, crazy mornings, yeah. And then dinners as well. Most people think they're the only ones that have those crazy mornings with kids or have those strange dinner experiences with kids. But apparently, we all share them, and you know, especially if you read Bruce's stuff, you're going to see that there's ways to address these things without going crazy. Isn't that right, Bruce?
I call them I'm dating myself, but I call these the two nuclear winters of contemporary families, the hour after everybody wakes up and the hour before everybody goes to bed. That's when everything seems to go wrong. So the way I approach the world, if that's the most difficult time, let's find some solutions, because we're all looking for some solutions. And that's one of the things I try to do in
right.
Secrets of Happy Families.
Well, in L.A., we're approaching that hour right now. You're listening to Gervie's Law. We'll be right back with Hudson and Harper. We're going to break them away from their iPads and see what they have to say about this topic. Stay with us.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Because I'm happy.
All right, come on, guys. Hudson and Harper, clap along. Are you happy?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're really happy?
Yeah.
I want to hear you clapping along. I love that song. It's so positive. Good clapping, Huds. It is so positive to be happy, even though there's some tough times. And if you want to be happier in your life, you got to pick up Bruce Feiler's new book, Life is in the Transitions, Mastering Change at Any Age. Bruce, thanks for staying with us. I hope people get a chance to change their lives when they're going through these transitions. And we have Hudson and Harper here now. And Bruce's kids, the twins, they're now 15, so it's a little easier for them to take care of themselves. Guys, how hard has it been for you now that, you know, we've been on this coronavirus thing for 5 or 6 months? Has your life changed a lot, or are you still the same people?
My life has changed a lot.
How
so? My life has changed a lot, too.
So what's the best thing about it, and what's been the most challenging thing about it?
Hudson, what's the best thing about your life now?
The best thing about my life is that in July I went to camp and it was really fun.
Yeah, and Harper?
The best thing in my life is I'm going to go back to school. That camp, there's a camp thing where I go back to school for like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, so that's called Camp Connect, and your school is having two hours a day that they actually can go back on campus. You just had your coronavirus COVID tests, and you came back negative, so you can go back on Wednesday, I believe.
Wow.
And then you're going to have remote learning. So you're really looking at the positive things, Hudson Harper, that you're going to be able to see your friends for a couple of hours. But what about negatives? When things don't go just the way you want them to, how do you think about that? What do you do?
Well, I sometimes try to make myself feel better, try to make myself feel better, like when I'm in my room. I, like, read a book or hug a teddy bear or something like that, or try to go downstairs.
Beautiful.
What about you, Hudson? How do you make yourself feel better?
I usually, like, do something like watch TV or go swimming in the swimming pool to make me feel better.
And what did you do yesterday on the ice?
I played hockey.
And how did that make you feel?
I really like hockey, and it made me feel happy that I get to play it.
Yeah, because that's one sport that's still going, because your baseball and Harper's softball has stopped, but you really played great out on the ice. You were skating so fast. You had so much motivation. So, Bruce, when you talk about distractions, because I think that's what the kids are talking about, that they get happier with distractions. How does that fit within your paradigm?
So what I discovered when I was looking on happy families in particular is that high-functioning families have three things in common. Number one is that they are adaptable, right? Because we think that, oh, we're going to be, you know, as parents, we're going to make some rules and everyone's going to follow the rules and everything is always going to, like, work as planned, but it doesn't work as planned, and as the pandemic is reminding us. And therefore, some way to learning to be adaptable. We have in my family a family meeting every week. We did one this afternoon, even with my 15-year-olds, where we talk about what's going well and what's not going well and how can we try to do things better in the week ahead. And so being adaptable is one thing that high-functioning families have in common. The next is that they talk a lot, and they talk a lot about the values, like what's important to us as a family. In our family meeting this week, I said tonight, just not a few hours ago here in Brooklyn, we're going to have our back-to-school one next Sunday. And I'm going to ask you, like, what are your goals for the year? Like, what are you hoping to get out, even this year where you're going to be largely virtual? And in the case of my high school sophomores, in person once a day, at least as long as we can do that. So we're going to talk about our goals, and we're going to, like, talk about what's important and how we can continue to move forward.
That is a great – I want to ask the kids that, because it's a really great idea, and I know you talk about that a lot. Guys, what do you think of Bruce's idea to have family meetings? How do you think that would go? Because we've had some, but not on a regular basis. Harper?
Like, I don't know. Maybe it would probably go good.
Why would it go good? You like talking things out. And, you know, Bruce is an expert on this, and his kids, they probably, Eden and Tybee, they've probably become experts. So you sit down and you talk about what your goals are, what you want to accomplish. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, and one time we did it at dinner.
Yeah? And what did you say?
I said my goal is to tie my shoes.
That's a great goal.
Oh, that's an awesome goal. That's a great goal for this for that time period. And though you can
Bruce,
do another one now. I love that.
You know what it reminds me of? I don't know if you ever saw My Dinner with Andre, but it's one of my favorite movies. And, you know, I know there's two. They're having dinner, and the one guy's talking about climbing Mount Everest and getting awakenings in Tibet and Nepal. And then the other guy's thinking, I wonder if I fed my cat today.
Well, one of the things that's very successful, and you'll find it as your kids get older, that's very successful about the family meeting process, is that children of different generations are equals with the parents. And so it's a safe space where everybody can bring things to the table of any age, and then you can say, this is how we're going to work things together. And then the third one, by the way, the third, so we said adapt all the time, talk a lot, and the third, you know, echoes the hockey thing you said, which is that high-functioning families go out and play. They find time to make a memory, be with one another. Again, it sounds the easiest, but especially now when we often can't leave, whether it's game night or my kids are not sports kids, they're arts kids. And so, like, we try, especially with teenagers, getting them to spend time with us can be challenging. So every Saturday night, we watch a Broadway show or a movie about a Broadway show.
Oh, wow.
In movie form, because that's the thing that they're most passionate about. And so,
yeah, my
finding
kids,
time to make memories, especially when it's challenging like this, is even more important.
My kids love that. Hudson just lit up. What is your favorite movie? And I don't know if Bruce has seen it, but it is a musical, and they sing it's a little bit about the Barnum and Bailey story. The greatest what?
Well, my favorite movie is called MVP.
That's not what I was talking about. That's
all. The Greatest Showman.
The Greatest Showman.
There you go.
That
See?
One of yours is The Greatest Showman. The MVP is a chimp who plays hockey. So I love that movie too. And Hudson, you said something really important yesterday that I was really proud of you. Harper was getting a little bit frustrated. And what did you say to her about patience?
To be patient in life.
Why did you say that? Because that's such an important theory of life.
Because she was not being patient. She really wanted to do something or do it already.
So I think patience is something that we all can think about and learn from, because we only have a minute as we start school, guys. Harper, you're going to be patient, right? You know that good things are going to come your way. What are you most looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to
What are you looking forward to? Hudson, you want to chirp in here what you're looking forward to when you start school?
Well, I'm looking forward to learning a lot of multiplication in school.
There you go.
That's a good one.
You may be the only person in Los Angeles County, but that's good for you.
I'm
Bring looking, on multiplication.
We are all looking ahead. Harper, you're looking forward to having a good year in school, aren't you?
Yeah.
Say it loudly. Say, yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
And with a big smile on her face, we're going to have to close it out there. Bruce Feiler, I want to thank you. It's just been an amazing hour being with you, and good luck with everything as we move forward. In the book is Life is in the Transitions. Get it now.
Thank you so much for having me. Transitions work, everybody. We'll get through this time together.
We are going to get through it. Hudson and Harper, I love you guys. Thanks for being with me on the air today. What do you say? Hudson and Harper, say bye to everyone.
Bye.
Say listen to Gervie's Law.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.